Omaha Public Radio presents another program from the University of Nebraska at Omaha on Noon Forum. We'll hear a lecture from the Democracy Matters series, a citizen engagement initiative sponsored by UNO's College of Public Affairs and Community Service. The guest speaker will be Herman Cain, former chairman of Godfather's Pizza, host of his own radio talk program in Atlanta, Georgia, a regular commentator on the Fox News Network, and a syndicated columnist for North Star Writers Group. The topic of his talk will be The Art of Leadership. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Monday afternoon, March 23, 2009, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the University of Nebraska at Omaha, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is B.J. Reed, Professor and Dean of the College of Public Affairs and Community Service at the University of Nebraska at Omaha.
Raised in Georgia, Herman Cain adopted the lessons of his parents, dedication to hard work and the importance of faith, and carried them with him to the pinnacle of corporation world. He earned a degree in mathematics in Morehouse College in 1967, and later earned a master's degree in computer science from Purdue University. He then worked as a business analyst for Coca-Cola Company in 1968 when he met and married his wife, Gloria, and they have two grown children. Today, Herman is a radio talk show host, The Herman Cain Show. I thought that was a really good title. Out of Atlanta's WSB, 750 AM, and he's also a Fox News business commentator. Cain remains president and CEO of The New Voice, Inc., and serves on a number of boards of directors, including Hallmark Cards and Whirlpool Corporation. In 2004, he ran as a candidate for the U.S. Senate from Georgia. Here in Omaha, Herman is remembered as the former CEO of Godfather's Pizza with a strong dedication to the community. At UNO, he founded the Cain Leadership Program, which provides students with the support to attend college while providing student body with diversity of experience and the opinion that might otherwise be absent. Also, on a kind of a personal note, Dave Hinton just walked into the room. Dave and Herman were both on the board of Joe Edmondson Youth Outreach, and really, Herman did a terrific job of raising money for Joe. And if you know Joe or knew Joe and Gene, you knew how important that program was for the kids who participated in that. So without further ado, the UNO Democracy Matters, the College of Public Affairs and Community Service, Project Achieve, the Goodrich Scholarship Program, and Minority Affairs are pleased to introduce Herman Cain. Herman?
Well, good afternoon. Y'all can do better than that. Good afternoon. Now, you didn't start at 7:30 the way I did. I know y'all got more energy, so that's great. Thank you all for being here. This is like coming home, because I always see a lot of familiar faces. And for those people that are here because you missed me, thank you. And for those of you that are here under duress, thank you also. I will try to make this as painless as I possibly can. But I always enjoy coming back to Omaha because it is part of our life, part of our lives. We've got a lot of good friends here, a lot of people that we've worked with over the years, church members. And when you have those kind of real relationships, they never go away. I used to always tell my kids when we would have to move, because I was telling the Cain scholars earlier, I've had five careers in my life. My dad was lucky if I had one. He would have been happy if I'd have just had one career. But every time we get ready to move, and you know how young people will get all stressed over leaving their friends, I would always say, you're going to have some permanent friends here, and you're going to make some new friends there. And that's exactly what has happened to us all of the times that we have had to move. I would like to make a few remarks in about half my time. And then in the other half, open it up for questions. Because I may not know everything that is on your mind or questions that you would like to ask me. That's when it really gets to be fun. But because this is about Democracy Matters and the theme is the art of leadership, I thought it would be appropriate to start with a couple of things about the science of leadership before I say something about the art of leadership. Because it doesn't really matter what your endeavor is, what your profession is. The thing that separates great achievers from good achievers is the fact that some of them, the great achievers, understand whether instinctively or not that there's an intangible side to achieving great success. And I call that the art of leadership. In sports, the great athletes may be blessed with great athletic skill. Michael Jordan didn't know that he was Michael until way later in his career. He didn't start out with all of the capabilities that he was able later to exhibit in his career. Michael set himself apart by taking his skills to a whole new level. Tiger Woods has redefined golf because he took the natural ability, the polishing of the skills, and added his own artistic flair and dedication to his profession that he moved it to a whole new level. Great musicians. Most of us can learn how to play the piano or the violin or the trumpet or the drums. If you go through the books and take all of the lessons, you can learn all the skills. But who are the truly great ones? The ones who were able to take the skills and then leverage the skills to a whole new plateau. The art of that profession. Leadership is the same way. No matter what the institution, what the organization, no matter what the size of the organization, leadership is exactly the same way. There are some fundamental skills that you need to understand if you are even going to attempt to lead anybody anywhere. But then the great leaders have that intangible that is sometimes hard to describe. But when you see it, you know it. You know it. John F. Kennedy was a great leader. John F. Kennedy was a great leader. One of the things that distinguished John F. Kennedy and many of these other great leaders, Ronald Reagan was a great leader. That doesn't mean that he always did everything right that everybody agreed with. Reagan made some mistakes. Kennedy made some mistakes. Great leaders make some mistakes. Abraham Lincoln made some mistakes. But with the great leaders, you don't focus on their mistakes. You focus on, well, what did they do great? Because it is the great things that leaders do that changes organizations. So John F. Kennedy is one of my examples of a great leader because he was able to get an entire nation to believe in a vision that we could walk on the moon. And he said we would do it by the end of the decade of the 60s. He empowered the entire nation to believe we can do that. That's what leaders do. But the great leaders that exercise the art of leadership, they not only throw out this big vision, but they also have the ability to make it believable. As a country, we knew that we had all of the pieces. As a leader, Kennedy knew that we had all of the pieces, wandering around out there in this country and with our American ingenuity and the development of our scientific capabilities, and it gave the whole country something to rally around. And by the end of the decade of the 60s, we did. But if it had not started with that compelling vision, the rest of us might not have been able to connect the dots and make it happen. There are three skills of leadership that I like to describe. Oh, yeah, there are a lot of books. There's a lot of ways to do it. You got courses on leadership. You got seminars on management. There have literally been thousands of books written on leadership. So while I was still living in Omaha back in 1996, I decided to write another book on leadership. I figured since the others hadn't gotten it right, why don't I try one? We needed one more book on leadership. And people are still writing books on leadership. Why? Because you might be able to describe the analytical or the technical or the skill side of leadership till the cows come home. It is that artistic side of leadership that people keep trying to put in a bottle. You can't put it in a bottle. Not when it comes to the art of leadership. But let's first make sure we don't forget about what are those things that you have to know how to do. You have to understand if you're going to even try to be a leader. I call it the three leadership principles, W-A-R, W-A-R acronym. I wanted to give you something easy to remember so, Pam, you wouldn't have to, you know, stress out over writing your notes once you got back home. War. Leadership is war. W-A-R. No matter what the situation, no matter what the problem, no matter what the challenge, it starts with W-A-R. W. Working on the right problems. That's an old saying. If you're not working on the right problems, you're not going to get the right solution. Isn't that common sense? Working on the right problems. I remember talking with Susan and the others when we had lunch about when I first came to Godfathers. And Professor Mel said, "What's the best book you ever read other than the Bible?" Well, he knew not to stop until he said, "Other than the Bible, you know. I am a Baptist preacher, you know, don't you know?" Which means it's hard for me to stay on time, but I'm going to try. So Mel said, "Well, what's your favorite book other than the Bible?" I said, "I'm glad you qualified that." Immediately I thought about on my way to Omaha to become president of Godfather's Pizza in 1986. My first day on the job was supposed to be that Tuesday, April 1st, 1986. Still remember this. The reason I remember this is because the NCAA basketball tournament, which is going on right now, the Final Four was in Dallas, Texas. I was living in Philadelphia, in the Philadelphia area. So I had talked to my boss about, instead of starting on Monday, I said, "Why don't I just start on April 1st? They'll think it's an April Fool's Day joke." I show up as the new president of Godfathers. Yeah, they thought it was a joke. Until they got the memo. And so I'm on my way from Philadelphia to Dallas, looking forward to taking over Godfather's Pizza. And I got on the plane in Philadelphia, and I was putting my bag in the overhead, and there was a book that was left there by someone who had been on the plane earlier. And I picked up the book, looked at it. It still had the sales slip in it. No name, nothing. So I presented it to the flight attendant, and she said, I said, "Somebody left this book on here. Do you want to turn it into lost and found?" And she said, "Well, I don't see any kind of identification on it, so you just found yourself a book." Well, the name of that book was Marketing Warfare by Al Reese and Jack Trout. Second best book I ever read. And the reason is because I was on my way to Godfather's Pizza to be its new leader, its new president, and turn around a struggling company, and I had no idea how I was going to do that. But I found some answers in that book, Marketing Warfare, which is why I believe it was a God thing. And to this day, I have applied two of the biggest lessons that I learned from that book to every job that I've had. Number one, focus. Focus is the ability to block out the unnecessary so you can concentrate on what's necessary. Too many people fail because they try to do too much stuff. And when things get difficult, that's when you reduce the stuff. Simplify. But often people would do just the reverse, especially in businesses. Godfathers got in trouble because they kept throwing new products on the menu, new variations. We had too much stuff going on in those restaurants. So since I was a newly appointed genius of marketing from one book, I said, principle number one in developing our new strategy, focus. Well, that's what we needed to do. And then that whole concept rippled all the way down in the organization. Focus, 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 focus. We used to have 18 different ingredients on the make table at Godfather's. So if you go into Godfather's, you know, you could order whatever combination you wanted to, and we'd have 18 ingredients. So one day I'm visiting Godfather's and going into the restaurants and talking to the crew members and talking to the managers, and I went into one of my restaurants early on because the first 30 days, all I did was visit with restaurants and talk with people. I didn't have the answers. My job was to have the questions. And I remember going into one store and one of the teenagers working on the make table. We keep it real simple. The make table is where you make pizzas. Okay? This is not high tech, y'all. The make table. You stand there and you make a pizza. Somebody gives you a crust, you put on the sauce, you add the toppings, you put on the cheese, and then you stick it in the oven. So this one kid was on the make table, and I was going around introducing myself. He'd heard that we had a new president at Godfather's, and on and on and on, and I'm walking through, and yeah, I had on my business suit and all this good stuff. He looks up. He says, "Oh, you must be the new big guy." So, well, what do you mean by the new big guy? He said, "Well, they said we had a new president, and they said that he'd probably be going around visiting the restaurants, so you look like the new big guy." I said, "Well, thank you. Well, I am the new president. I don't know about the new big guy." So I said, "What is your name?" He said, "Jason." I said, "Well, nice to meet you, Jason. How long have you been working at Godfather's?" He says, "Oh, I've been working here for about 4 or 5 years all the way through school." I said, "You going to college?" He says, "Yep, going to college. This has been a great learning experience. And I'm going to college, I'm going to major in business administration. I want to be a businessman one day, so one day I can own my own business." I said, "You go, Jason. Good for you." He said, "By the way, I understand you all are having some financial problems. Your crew knows. They know. You don't have to give them a report or sending them a memo. They know if the company is struggling." I said, "Well, yeah, we have our challenges, Jason. We've got to try to turn things around." He said, "Well, I got one suggestion." I said, "What's that?" He said, "You know, here on this make table, you got 18 ingredients." I said, "Yeah." He said, "You don't need all 18 of those." I said, "Why?" He said, "I work here almost every day. I work here about 4 or 5 times a week." He said, eight of these I never use. You wasting money." I said, "Which 8 are we wasting money on, Jason?" He told me what the 8 were. He said, "You only need 10. I said, "Great idea. Focus, simplify." He hadn't even heard the speech about focus and simplify. This is just common sense. So Jason told me which 8 ingredients to get rid of. So when I got back to the office, I called in my vice president of research and development. Her name was Leah. Remember Leah, buddy? Yeah, Leah. Leah Peters. She was my vice president of research and development. I called Leah. I said, Leah, I have a suggestion. I said, I want you to narrow the make table down to only carry 10 toppings or 10 ingredients at a time instead of the 18. She said, why? I said, because Jason said so. She said, well, how do we know which ones to take off if you only limit it to 10? I said, ask Jason. She went and talked to Jason, and she talked to some other people that worked in the restaurant. By God, we were wasting money with stuff we didn't need. Stuff we didn't even need. Saved us money. But you know what it also did? It had an unintended consequence. It made it simpler for the people to make the pizza right. We uncomplicated it. That's focus. And that was one of the biggest things that we did in order to get Godfather's Pizza back on the track. And the other lesson that I learned in marketing warfare was, if you're not number one, don't chase number one. You're never going to catch them. The only way you would catch number one is that if they stumble and fall and you run over them. Pizza Hut was number one with 6,000 units. Domino's was number two with 4,000 units. Little Caesars was number three with 3,000 units at the time. Godfather's was number six with 700 units. We couldn't chase number one, number two, or number three, or number four. We couldn't chase anybody. So we developed a strategy that said, let's just be good at what we do in the neighborhood and be a great local choice. So marketing warfare, one of the biggest lessons is work on the right problem. And the right problem for Godfathers was simplify, simplify, simplify. In every aspect of the business all the way down. Secondly, A stands for ask the right questions. Ask the right questions. I said, Leah, why do we have 18 ingredients on the make table? She said, I don't know. I said, ha. Ask Jason. He'll tell you, we don't need 18. Ask the right questions. When was the last time we remodeled all of the Godfather's Pizza restaurants? Godfather's Pizza started in 1973. Many of them had never remodeled those restaurants since 1973. In any business that you have, you need a facelift every once in a while. We have to do it with our bodies and our faces. So you need to do it with your business. They hadn't done anything to freshen up the look of Godfather's in all that time. So I asked that question, and I said, well, I think it's time we upgrade the image of Godfather's. That was one of the things that we needed to do. But you start with asking the right questions. And then R, remove barriers which prevent self-motivation. You're in the barrier removal business, not the garbage removal business, the barrier removal business, W-A-R. Work on the right problems, ask the right questions, and remove barriers which prevent self-motivation. At Godfather's, the barrier was too much stuff. Too much complexity. So we simplified and we removed that. Those are some of the fundamentals of being a leader that you need to understand no matter what job you're in or no matter what you do. And obviously, I've written a book on it, so if you all want more instruction, you can. HermanCain.com, HermanCain.com. I'm not trying to sell y'all in the books. I'm just trying to give you a way to fill in the blanks and connect the dots. Since I'm not going to lecture all afternoon. But no, I have that book on my webpage as well as a DVD of the leadership speech and a couple of other DVDs online. You can find them at HermanCain.com. And also, for those of you that are dying to hear a great radio talk show, you can also listen to that online. Even though I'm in Atlanta, if you go to HermanCain.com and click on WSB, it'll take you right there. We try to make it real simple for you, you know. See how I applied that even in my radio business. It's real easy for y'all to find me. If you can spell my name, you can find me. It's just that easy. It doesn't get any simpler than that, Mel. And so published that book on leadership, did another one on CEO of Self, which is a self-leadership book. You know, I talk about these same principles and all because they don't change. They don't change. Now, let's talk about the art of leadership. And I describe it three components. You notice I kind of keep things simple. Never give more than 3 points relative to a point. It's just too much, you know. It overcomplicates things. And I usually find that if I force myself into three, guess what? Usually others will fit in there somewhere. And remember, a speech is not a PhD dissertation where you are defending your life work. A speech is to stimulate thinking such that you may want to go and do some further study and research from what the speaker said. So, you know, I'm not going to give you a final exam when this is over with, but hopefully it'll cause you to say, you know, that makes some sense. I think I may want to check that out. Now, here's how I describe the art of leadership. The script says, sip water. The art of leadership. Three things. I call them the three C's. Now, if my name had been Brown, it would have been the three B's. You know, it's just a marketing thing, okay? So, but it's Cain, so it's the three C's. First, leaders have a compelling vision. Remember John F. Kennedy, the example that I gave? A compelling vision. But a compelling vision is simple, clear, and believable. Ronald Reagan made it real clear. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. What part of tear down that wall don't y'all understand? It wasn't complicated. It wasn't complicated. Abraham Lincoln, a union divided against itself cannot stand. That's real simple to understand. When I was running the National Restaurant Association, I did that. That was one of the jobs I did after I left here. And the Restaurant Association had a mission statement like most organizations. And when I first got there, I had been on the board of the National Restaurant Association. And from time to time at a board meeting, the executive vice president of the organization, a full-time person who ran the organization, would from time to time, you know, put it in the board book, you know, this thick, or put it up on the screen and talk about it. And the mission statement was probably a page and a half long. And nobody really knew what was in it. My philosophy always been, if every person in the organization cannot understand it and recite it on spot, something's wrong with it. It's too complicated. So Lisa was our receptionist. This was the old days when you call the organization and a human being answered the phone. The good old days. And for most businesses today, they are returning to the good old days. I mean, I know it's easy to have a computer to do all of your phone answering and, you know, I called my doctor's office the other day just to get a blood pressure prescription refilled. Hello, thank you for calling, you know, da-da-da, family practice. Our menu of options has changed. I'm going, oh, great. You couldn't talk to a person. But Lisa used to be the receptionist for the National Restaurant Association. And so one day, and I had taken the mission statement for Godfather's Pizza and I redid it and boiled it down to three things. And Lisa one day was kind of down, not in a very good mood, and I happened to stop and talk to her. I said, what's the problem? She didn't feel as if she was, you know, getting up every day, coming to work, but didn't really know what she was. She said, I just don't know where I'm going with my life. I said, why do you say that? Well, you know. I said, well, you have a job here. That's something. At least you're working. She says, well, she said, Mr. Kane, you can get anybody to do this job and answer the phones. I said, Lisa, no, not just anybody. I don't want just anybody. Yeah, anybody can answer the phone. I said, but Lisa, I don't think of you as the receptionist. I think of you as my director of first impressions. She perked up. Who do they talk to when they call here first? Me? Yes. And if you're in a grouchy mood, guess what? They think the whole organization is grouchy. And I had been talking to the staff and redoing the mission statement, and I took a page and a half and I boiled it down to three statements. The Restaurant Association, the National Restaurant Association, has three objectives: to represent the members of the industry, to educate its members and the members of the industry, and to promote the industry. REP. Represent, educate, and promote. That's what that page and a half said. I said, Lisa, do you remember the little discussion I gave about, you know, the mission of the Restaurant Association? She said, yeah, I remember. I said, what was it? She said, REP. I said, great. What did those stand for? She said, represent, educate, and promote. Very good. I said, do you know which one of those you directly impact? She said, no. Promote. Every time you answer that phone, you are promoting the image of the National Restaurant Association. Everybody in the organization understood the compelling vision. It was simple, it was clear, and believable. Second aspect of the art of leadership, compelling communications. Which president comes to mind when you say the great communicator? I can't hear you. Reagan, see? Reagan, this is an interactive presentation, y'all, okay? It's all right to answer the questions. Jeez, y'all making me work too hard up here. Come on. As the preacher says, I need a little help. Help me, help me. Some of y'all understand that. Reagan, thank you. Give me an amen and I'll be up here all day. Yeah. Dr. Hayes know how to get a speaker going. Give him an amen once in a while. Amen. All right. Reagan, the great communicator. Do y'all know what he did? Coincidentally, I'm not throwing any hints. Before he ran for office, he was a radio show host. He was a radio commentator. Good training, huh, for president? Not throwing any hints. Don't spread any rumors. Reagan was a master. Maybe it came from partly because of his acting career. That probably did help in some ways. But Ronald Reagan knew how to connect with people in a compelling fashion. Most of your great preachers, quite frankly, that's what they do. Most of your great preachers know how to connect with people. And if they're a pastor of a church, every Sunday, they got to prepare a message that will connect with people. And you know, some are better than others. Some you know to expect to be spiritually fed that Sunday. And they have this ability to give a message that probably touches everybody in that audience in one way. That's why we go back every Sunday. You ever walked out and said, I didn't get nothing out of that sermon today? Yeah, I know y'all been there. I've been there. I ain't getting nothing out of that. It may not have been what they said. It may not have been the text. It may not have been. It was just, it didn't connect with you. Great leaders have compelling communication skills. Reagan is an example. Great ministers and great preachers are examples. One of my TV preacher heroes is Dr. Robert Shula. Dr. Robert Shula has the ability to, look, let me tell you something. It's hard enough to connect with the congregation if you are the pastor, you have given a sermon. It's hard enough to connect if I'm speaking like to a live group like this. But to be able to connect on TV, I'm telling you, that is much more difficult. But he has mastered it. Before I ever met him, I used to be a regular viewer of it because of the succinctness of his messages, which made him not just a powerful preacher or a powerful speaker, but he was a powerful leader. That's why he built that great ministry out in California. And I can remember getting the call from one of the members of his staff where Dr. Shula was inviting me out to be one of his guests that he interviewed on his program. That was quite an honor because of my humble beginnings and taking over Godfathers and my life story, and those are the kind of stories that he would present. And then one time I got invited to speak at a men's conference that they had out there. So I went and spoke at the men's conference, and that's when he discovered that I had some preacher in me. So he invited me back, and this was one of the greatest compliments I ever received. He invited me back one summer when he was going to be on vacation and asked me to actually deliver the morning message at the Crystal Cathedral. That was one of the greatest honors and one of the most exciting things I have ever done in my life. And the thing about it is they have two services and they record them because that's the same service that they show nationally. Ooh-wee, I thought I was something else. But it was a great experience. But when I approached that particular situation, I had to take all of that into account. You know, I had spoken in front of church congregations before, audiences before, but now I got this camera looking at me with millions of people who are going to be looking. Now, the thing that you don't do is overthink it. Let me give you an example of overthinking it. Remember the recent speech that President Obama gave, the first address to Congress. Now, some of you all kept it on the station and you watched the Republican response. Governor Jindal of Louisiana. Governor Jindal of Louisiana delivered the Republican response after President Obama spoke. President Obama is one of the greatest orators on the planet. I've heard Bobby Jindal, Governor of Louisiana, speak before, and he is excellent if he's just talking from an outline like I'm talking from today. But somebody said, this is your 15 minutes of fame. You're representing the whole Republican Party. Millions of people are going to be watching. Don't get nervous. And don't leave anything out. So what did Governor Jindal do? Wrote the speech out. It was the worst speech he had ever given. And one of the worst responses I had ever seen on TV. So if you are going to be put in a challenging communications situation, don't overthink it and don't get away from your A game. Stick with your A game. And when I got ready to deliver that sermon at Crystal Cathedral, I stuck with my A game. I don't write my sermons out word for word. I didn't do it there because I was going to be nervous. Stick with your A game when it comes to communications. What works for you? What works best for you? And even if you're in a different situation, analyze the situation so you can adapt to the situation, but don't change your A game. By the way, I have a book called Speak as a Leader that talks about these principles. I just thought I'd throw that in. It's also at HermanCain.com. hermancain.com. Bob, just in case you hadn't gotten it yet, you know, I do have a website. I throw that out. I'm just trying to help y'all. I am trying to stimulate your thinking. That's why I've got these resources there where I talk about how do you approach different audiences in different settings in preparing a speech. Now, I've been doing this for a while, y'all. Compelling communications. And the last C is compelling personality. Not everybody is blessed with a compelling personality, but if you want to be a great leader, it would help. It would help. If you know you do not have a compelling, perky, bubbly personality, be realistic about what you ought to do with your career. God gave all of us individual abilities and capabilities. Figure out what yours are and focus on maximizing your God-given talents first. I never encourage my grown kids, they're grown now, I never encourage my kids walk in my footsteps. I always said, create your own. Create your own. Create your own. And that's why I believe that great leaders are born. Good leaders keep working at it. A lot of people can be good leaders, but only a few are great leaders. The great leaders are born, but they're smart enough to fine-tune their skills along the way. Great leaders don't stop working on fine-tuning their skills and their basics, even though they may possess naturally some of those characteristics of the art of leadership. Compelling vision, making it believable, simple, and clear. Compelling communications skills and a compelling personality. Now, how does that relate to Democracy Matters? It relates to Democracy Matters, which is a theme, line, phrase I love, because democracy matters, because if it were not for democracy, this country wouldn't be what it is today, even with the problems that we have. Even with the problems and the challenges we have, if it were not for democracy and free enterprise, we wouldn't be the United States of America. We got problems, but we're still the greatest country in the world. We've got frozen credit markets, but we're still the greatest country in the world. What happened when our credit markets froze up? They froze up all over the world. What happens when our economy is booming? Other economies boom. We are still the greatest country in the world because of democracy and free enterprise. But it is my observation and the observation of many that right now today we have a severe leadership void in Washington, D.C. Both parties. I'm not going to be partisan here. I haven't been happy with either one of them in the last two decades. Because unfortunately, we continue to get business as usual. Democracy matters because each of your votes and each of your voices matters. I don't care how small. I had a lady call my radio show one night. In fact, it was just last week, earlier this week. What's today, Monday? It was last week. I lost track. Lady calls the show. Herman, you know, I'm just ready to give up. I said, don't you dare tell me you're ready to give up. I said, I don't play that. Homie, don't play this give up.
Homie, don't play that. This is still our country. She said, well, you know, I joined your intelligent thinkers movement. You can find it at HermanCain.com. Intelligent thinkers movement. Check it out. And you sent us a Cain alert, said send an email to my congressman and senator, and I did that. But it doesn't seem like it did any good. I said, but it did. She said, I heard that the switchboard and the email systems in Washington, this was a few weeks ago before they passed that first $789 billion stimulus package, got all clogged up. I said, that is a good thing. That means that millions of people didn't like it. And my organization and other organizations got active. And when they get millions of phone calls, millions of emails on a particular position on an issue, they do matter. They matter. The fact that the phone bank got clogged up and the email system got clogged was a good thing. That means they got a lot of them. Now, let me tell you something, and I told her, I said, here's what I know for a fact. When you make a call or you send an email, they've got some full-time staffers that logs every one of them by category. Maybe the representative got a report that said, you got 10,000 emails against you voting for this. And you got maybe 200 that said, vote for it. They do catalog it and they listen. You may not always know that. And secondly, and I'm telling this to the listener, I said, secondly, we can't win every battle. It's not going to be instant gratification every time you cast one vote. It's not going to be instant gratification every time you send one email. That's the problem that we have. Too much expectation of instant gratification. Government is not a sitcom or a 30-second soundbite. But if we sit on the sidelines, and this is what I feel most passionate about, if we sit on the sideline with our one vote, with our one phone call and our one email, this country will fail. So get involved, because we the people are still in charge of this country. We the people are still in charge of this country, because democracy matters. We the people are still in charge of this country, because when the founding fathers said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men inclusive and women are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Do you know what a lot of people do? They stop right there. Keep reading. When any form of government, if you keep reading, becomes destructive of these ideals, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. That's the most important part of the Declaration of Independence. Keep reading. Keep reading. So get connected and get off the sidelines. Because democracy does matter. All right, we got time for questions. 10 minutes. See how well I did, Karen? You know, see how well I told you. I know how to, you know, condense it down. We still got 10 minutes for questions. Yes, sir.
I was impressed by your comment on it's still the same thing up there. I know we have a new president, but it seems like it's entrenched, and these guys are hard to get out of office.
Yeah.
And they're going to continue to play the game. What's your personal thoughts on term limits? Because we the people don't, I don't think we hear the right story one way or another. We
Correct.
Get everybody's, but I think your opinion's valuable to us because of your knowledge and
Yep.
your wisdom.
You are right. It's too much business as usual, and I strongly, strongly support term limits. I used to be on the fence. I'm not on the fence anymore. I'm not on the side of the fence with AstroTurf. I'm on the side with grass. I strongly believe in term limits. Here's where we need to start. We need to start with unseating the leadership of the United States House and the United States Senate. They reward people for staying in office a long time, not based upon their ability to lead, not based upon how smart they are. All you have to do to get elected Speaker of the House is to have been there longer than any other person in your party. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. So it is no secret that I am not a fan of Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. It is no secret that there are some Republicans that I'm not a fan of. I did a radio show one night that said, I am not a Republican. Don't call me a Republican. Ticked off every Republican in the state of Georgia. As my grandfather would say, I does not care. I don't work for them. It ain't about them. It is about we the people. And because she had been there the longest and the Democrats won control, her colleagues voted her Speaker of the House. Now, take these principles that I just gave you and do your own analysis of Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid. That's a homework assignment, okay? Don't take my word for it. So I do believe in term limits, but I also believe that the leaders have gone too far. And I believe that there's going to be a quick backlash in the November elections of 2010. That is my personal prediction. Because one of my books, another one of the books that I publish, I've done four. The title of this one was They Think We're Stupid. It is about politics and how they think that we're stupid. I have come to the conclusion that they think we are really stupid. Not everybody, but more than 50% of the people who vote have no clue. And some people know that, say one thing. This is a true story. I just finished doing a video shoot this morning for a TV pilot that I'm working on. Nancy Pelosi on a nighttime news program within the last month, caught on tape, said, I do not believe in earmarks. Those are those little extra things that they put in there that are port projects. I do not believe in earmarks. We will not have earmarks. I promise there will be no earmarks in the bills that we send forth. Promise, 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 and raise the hand promising it. Do you know how many earmarks was in the fiscal 09 budget? 8,600 earmarks, $7 billion worth. I hate to say it, the lady lied right there on TV. Look, I don't have to be politically correct. I didn't say she exaggerated. She lied. And I got the tape to prove it. But you're not going to see that on the mainstream media. You're not going to see that on some news programs. It's time for her to go. Period. So we the people have got to unseat those people that are ruining that institution that the founding fathers conceived. Other questions? Yes. And I think this will be our last one in the interest of ending on time. And yes, ma'am.
You've stated that you're a man of faith. What is your opinion of the role of faith in leadership and the seeming moral bankruptcy in our modern choice of leaders? Thank you.
Some leaders and some citizens misunderstand the First Amendment. And those strong leaders that are people of faith and they understand the First Amendment have to rebuke the forces
that are trying to take God out of our culture and God out of our government. The First Amendment does not say you can't have God in government. Our whole Constitution was based upon biblical principles. Most of the people who attended the first Constitutional Convention were preachers. But some people have misconstrued it to mean you can't have God in government. So we don't want the Ten Commandments displayed in the public square. Then you may as well go to the Supreme Court and start scraping all of those images of Moses off of it. The founders didn't intend for God not to be in government, for biblical principles not to guide our laws, not to guide our Constitution. That's how the Constitution was arrived at, those principles. Why do you think it says, I'm not mad at you. Why do you think it says, I'm not mad at you, you understand? Why do you think it says we are endowed by our Creator? If it's not an all-knowing, almighty being that most of us believe in, who is it? The tooth fairy? We are endowed by our Creator. That means you pick yours, you pick yours, you pick yours, and I pick mine. Didn't say we all have to have the same one. That's what the First Amendment says. So the government can't say, you better believe in the same God I believe in. You better be a Catholic. You better be a Protestant. You better be a, you know. That's what the First Amendment says. Government cannot dictate your religion, cannot dictate your God. But it did not say you could not utilize biblical principles. The whole Constitution is life. Isn't that in the Bible? Liberty. Last time I checked, Jesus didn't make anybody do anything. Come on, Pam, help me, help me. Did Jesus tell Peter and his brother, you got to follow me? He gave them a compelling vision. Y'all better get me out of here before we... And I will make you fishers of men. A compelling vision that was clear. Believable. God, I got to get out of here, y'all. Thank y'all very much.
You've been listening to a program from the University of Nebraska at Omaha on Noon Forum. We have heard a lecture by Herman Cain, former chairman of Godfather's Pizza, host of his own talk radio program in Atlanta, Georgia, a regular commentator on the Fox News Network, and a syndicated columnist for North Star Writers Group. The topic of his talk was The Art of Leadership. Mr. Cain's remarks were given as part of the Democracy Matters Lecture Series, a citizen engagement initiative sponsored by UNO's College of Public Affairs and Community Service. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Monday afternoon, March 23, 2009, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Wendy Townley, Assistant Director for Media Relations at UNO, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.